Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Hello, I'm Little Kevin Kelton, a writer and social media activist from Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Cryin' Rebecca Kushmiter, a social policy advocate and freelance writer from Kensington, Maryland.
I'm low-energy DJ McGuire, cost estimator and musician from Suffolk, Virginia.
And I'm Greg Matuszak, a teacher and political activist who's living large, thank you to the Trump tax break, from Cincinnati, Ohio. That's not really true.
No, we're going to get to the Trump tax break and all that stuff, but I wanted to say one thing up front. When I introduced myself as Little Kevin Kelton, it's obviously a reference to a tweet that the president sent out this morning or this afternoon talking about Congressman Adam Schiff, and he called him Little Adam Schiff. And I just want to say this at the top of the show. I happen to be a person of short stature, and I know that people think that this is funny. I think that him doing this, and he did it to Marco Rubio, is no different than him calling Kristen Gillibrand flat Kristen Gillibrand or making fun of somebody's weight or something like that. So I'm not playing nice anymore. For this show, I will be calling the President of the United States Little Donald Trump. Now, I wanted to call him Fat Donald Trump, but then I said to myself, no, that's fat shaming, and I'm not going to stoop to that. So I will be referring to him as Little Donald Trump throughout the program, and if anyone doesn't like that, that's tough on them. But it's my little protest.
No. You protest, but I'm not going to sink to his level.
The man, Kevin. Fight the power.
I refuse to call politicians names, except for that asshole Kasich.
So anyways, let's talk about the week that we've just experienced. The market, the stock market, had a bad day today following a bad day on Friday. I think we're down around 1,700 points or 1,800 points over the last 2 days, right, DJ?
It's about that. I think it's a little over 1,800 down since Thursday at close.
And I think that this is a precursor to a market correction and probably a recession. DJ, what do you think?
It probably is a precursor to a recession. I think it's a warning of a recession because the market is very concerned that interest rates are going to go up faster than expected. And if interest rates do go up faster than expected, it can lead to a recession. And I think that's what the market is really afraid about.
Right. And that's because we have low unemployment and because the interest rates are so low that they can only go up. And wages are starting to go up. And that is all inflationary. It's good for the people who are working and making more money. But on a macro level, it's inflationary. So that's what the market is reacting to.
Right. I think, but there are also a couple of other things at play. The recovery is now in its ninth year. If it actually makes it to the end of, if it makes it to, I think, summer, it will be, no, not summer, if it makes it to the end of the year, sorry, it will be the longest period of economic expansion in the nation's history, if my memory is correct. And the law of averages says it has to end sometime. So there are plenty of reasons to think a recession is coming, and an unexpected increase in interest rates is another reason for that. And I think the market is in part anticipating that that is coming down the pike.
So in other words, lock in your, if you're going to refinance your home, do it now.
Yes.
Today.
Oh, absolutely.
If,
yes.
If you're going to refinance your home, go back in time and do it in 2016.
But let me just point out, the other thing that's going on is the market was overvalued to begin with. A lot of it was just the euphoria of a pro-business president who had cut taxes on corporate America. It wasn't really fundamentally sound to begin with, and the experts knew that.
But we've also had this concept that everything is going well because Trump is, we have confidence in this Trump, blah, blah, blah. But what about the chair of the Fed, Janet Yellen? She just stepped down on, what was it, like
Today was the new guy's first day.
Today was the first day.
Today was the new guy's first
but
day.
But we all knew he was coming. Powell. Jerome Powell.
Jerome Powell.
Yeah.
Yeah, one analysis I read said that the uncertainty of a new Fed chair did contribute, but you know, that and the fears of inflation, the basic overvaluing of the market, and you know, and now that the tax cut is fait accompli, that those are all the elements that led to this sell off. But
and one thing I'm going to say, I'm going to just to address both points. While the uncertainty of a new chair may have something to do with it, the fact that Jerome Powell was perceived as someone who would essentially follow in Janet Yellen's footsteps, and he made no secret that that's essentially what he was going to do, I think that sort of drained the uncertainty from that issue. I think actually regarding the tax cut, one of the things that is not really talked about, but I think should be, is the fact that so many of the tax cuts are in fact temporary, particularly on the individual income side. These sort of temporary tax cuts are just, they're all about spurring aggregate demand. And if you're in a recessionary situation, that might make sense. If you're near a peak where we are now, spurring aggregate demand without doing anything about aggregate supply leads to higher inflation and leads to all
right.
of these concerns. Had the income tax cuts been permanent, then I could have said, okay, that's more of a supply side tax cut that could be more helpful. But you've heard me rail in earlier podcasts about how this was not a supply side tax cut, and thus it just fueled the inflationary fire instead of dousing it. And I think that's having an effect this week.
Right. And again, not to get too wonky, but just for people who might not understand this stuff, the tax cut was more of a stimulus. And when you stimulate an already accelerated economy, that can lead to inflation. That's why we had the reaction in the markets the last couple of days. But one thing, going back to the tax cuts, that I wanted to mention is, on some level, as you pointed out, DJ, they're temporary. And also, he keeps talking about the biggest tax break ever, blah, blah, blah.
Which it's not.
It's not. And, it's and people not. Forget that the Obama stimulus gave all households an $800 tax cut. No one remembers that. George W. Bush, in I think 2003, DJ, you could probably correct me if I'm wrong on the year, he mailed out $800 tax rebate checks to everyone in the country.
$200 if you were single.
Yeah, it was actually 300.
Because
I was married to my now ex-wife at the time. It was 300 and it was 2001.
Yeah.
Okay. So the numbers were wrong, but
the concept is sound. Your concept is sound. Nobody remembers it.
Yeah, it was so insignificant that the details have escaped us. We no longer remember getting $200 or $300 in 2001.
Exactly.
I do. I remember.
But Greg, what's your take on the tax cut?
I was going to say this tax cut. You know, not that I'm still not for it because I'm. But this tax cut's been pretty good to my household, and I've seen my household paychecks bi-monthly have gone up a little bit. And when I say a little bit, like a lot. Because, you know, I'm part of that 1%. No, I'm not part of the 1%, but our paychecks have gone up quite a bit. And I'm not saying that we're not going to get our asses handed to us at the end of the year in tax time, because we still have, I don't know, 12 months or before we have to pay on this. But it's not bad. And we're better off than that secretary who paid that dollar.
I was going to say, how many Costco memberships? How many Costco memberships
yeah,
can you
really,
buy
yeah.
with your tax
cut? We're measuring in Costco memberships. But, you know,
yeah, that's actually our new economic unit now. I would like to buy this car for 17 Costco units. Thank you. And I'd like a ticket to Thunderdome. That would be 4 Costco units. But
you know what? I can speak to this as somebody who's getting it on. I'm going to get the benefit and I'm going to get the downside. Yes, our top marginal rate has been cut and our paychecks are going to look different in my household. However, thanks to the cap on state and local income tax deduction, I have lost literally 30% of my deductions, and my deductions were not insignificant. Because our homes are overvalued where I live, so my mortgage interest is very high. State and county taxes where I live are very high. I was used to writing those off to the tune of mid-5 figures, and that's gone. 30% of that vanished, gone. And so my refund, which is something that we factor into our annual budget, is going to be significantly diminished. And I actually haven't done the math to figure out if it balances out from what our payroll taxes look like.
Well, what's going to happen is folks are seeing that their withholding has gone down because the rates have gone down, but they're not going to notice the effect on their refunds until next February or March when they file
exactly.
their taxes. Yeah. So it's they're seeing the reduction
we're gonna,
with
we're going to see
withholding
that
now.
After the election, which is the genius right. of all of it.
Well, let me because we have gotten a little wonkish today. You have to when you start talking numbers and tax breaks in the stock market. But let's go back to the big picture of why this tax cut is a disaster for America. Not for Republicans, not for Democrats, for America. What this tax cut did was it wrote a check against the federal debt for over $1.5 trillion to give $1 trillion to the richest people in America. That's what your president, little Donald Trump, did. He's going into debt, your country, your debt, for $1.5 trillion to give a little more than $1 trillion of it to the people that do not need it, will not spend it, and certainly will not be creating jobs with it. That's what the tax cut was.
Hey, they might hire a new gardener, some of those people, if they buy a fourth home.
Well, okay, so we talked about the stock market crash, but speaking of things that crashed and burned this week, there was the Nunes memo that came out on Friday with a little bit of a crackle and then a big thud.
Little Devin Nunes.
You know what the memo is? The memo itself wasn't the issue. It was the release of the memo. And the release of the memo, if you've ever been in a relationship or of any type, it was the three words, we have to talk. And
that's four words.
And that's what we have to. Oh, four words. Hey, you're not the only one who's not doing math tonight. So
I want you to have your own call-in relationship advice show after that.
I know. So you get those four words, and I still get it. Like, you'll get that note in the morning, like your wife leaves early, and she goes, "Hey, Greg, we have to talk about something." And you're like, "Oh my goodness, this is the worst thing ever. This is did she find someone better than me? I'm sure it's not that hard. I'm sure that's
it's that what did I do wrong feeling." Okay, go. We got it.
You got it. So then she gets home and she's like, "Hey, I'm thinking about beige for the bathroom, or maybe, you know, teal. What do you think?" And you're like, "Oh, is that it? That was this memo. Beige or teal?"
It was Al Capone's vault. It was Geraldo yeah. Rivera hyping for three weeks
yeah.
and bringing in cameras for Al Capone's vault, and it's a big empty hole.
Right, right.
Made
up, or
a hole with some Breitbart headlines in it in this case.
And for the record, we talked about the release the memo, and so we are just as guilty as members of the media. So we should be held to a higher standard. What was it, 2 weeks ago, last week, where we said, "Hey, what exactly is this?" And DJ, as usual, said I was wrong because I shouldn't be talking about this, but I did. There was nothing in the memo. It said pretty much, and it contradicted itself. It's so embarrassing that I even mentioned
it. But have you been watching Fox News coverage of it? Did you see Sean Hannity on Friday night?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Was he sweating?
Who would have thought?
Breathing heavy?
I mean,
yeah.
It was so over the top that it's hard to believe that adults watch this guy and fall for it. But, I mean, he was, you know, their thing is this is worse, much worse than Watergate. This is, you know, and they just analogize it to like the worst possible things in the world, and that the whole FBI has to be cleaned out and people should be going to jail and Robert Mueller should, you know, I was going to make a dirty joke, but I won't.
your restraint is admirable. I mean,
we all should have known that this was going to be worthless when it turned out that it was Don Jr. behind the hashtag. I mean, wasn't he basically the one who was spurring this whole release the memo thing?
No, I read an article. No, they traced it. They traced it to a real person. One person started it it got picked up by a couple of other people, then it went to the bots. But there's actually a person, I forget their nomenclature, the article didn't actually name the person to protect their privacy, but it started with one pro-Trumpist.
It was somebody who worked for Devin Nunes, probably.
Yeah, but it would not have gotten to what it did without the Russian bots. They exploded it beyond whatever this guy did. This is all bread and circuses without the bread. This is just an attempt to distract and to dazzle and to go, oh, look at the shiny object over there, and don't pay any attention to what's actually going on. And what I am hopeful of, because part of me refuses to stop being an optimist, is that now that this is all done and dusted, that the next memo that comes out, because Nunes said he's going to release about 4 or 5 more of them, people will not fall for this nonsense. They'll just go, oh, yeah, yeah, that's Nunes with his crazy memos. Let's actually look at the real problem.
I know. I feel like the additional memos are basically like all those follow-ups to the Twilight books. Nobody really wanted them. They're not that satisfying, and they're certainly not very good, but they just keep coming.
Yeah. Let's talk about the real follow-up memo, which is the
Democratic rebuttal memo that the House Committee on Intelligence just voted to allow to be declassified if the president so chooses. The question is, will the president so choose? Now, I have a chicken emoji that I want to use in my prediction about whether the president will declassify this. I don't think he's gonna. I think he's, you know, too scared of looking like an idiot. But
so what argument will he make to not release it?
That it's all fake news, and why would he release fake news?
You may be right.
After the guy's basically said our agents were worthless and a disgrace and little and dogs
and whatever else he calls people that he doesn't like. For the past week, he's been talking about how the FBI is the most horrible institution ever.
So we talked earlier about what the procedure for the president at this point. So it sits on his desk. If he does nothing, if he says, look, I don't want to think about this, it gets punted over to Congress, and then they vote on it. But one of the other things, and I didn't mention this earlier before the show, is he could punt it over to the CIA and the NSA to have them scrub it and see what they want redacted from it.
Well, actually, Greg, I heard on television today that actually it's the Democrats that might send it to the FBI to preempt what Trump might want to redact. They want to see what the FBI would redact, because they think it will be lighter than the Trump redactions.
Really?
Of course, we're going to find out how this plays out in the next several days. I personally hope that the president tries to suppress this memo, because it will be just another bad move in a chess game that he lost a long time ago and he doesn't know it. I'm going to ask around for the end of this segment is, suppose Trump did whatever it is that for you would be the red line. For some people, it's firing Rod Rosenstein. For other people, it might be pardoning, you know, some of the people that have already been indicted. And I think each of us here has that red line someplace in our conscience of what it is that this man could go too far. I want to know, what would you do to stand up to that?
Okay, I know. I guess I would, one, try to get even more politically active in my community. Two, I would probably start some sort of political, I don't know, podcast? Yeah, a podcast. I would do a podcast and try to rally the people around the people's voice. I'm the people's voice.
Are you sure?
I think I am.
Actually, you probably are. On this podcast, of the four of us, you're probably the people's voice.
Guys, folks. Okay. Donald Trump can fire Rosenstein and Mueller.
Rosenstein.
Tomorrow. Rosenstein. Whatever the hell his name is.
Frankenstein.
If the Democrats are in control of the House of Representatives on January 3rd, 2019, then the House Oversight Committee can bring them back and reset up the investigation, and Donald Trump can do nothing about it. The fact of the matter is, while firing Rosenstein and Mueller would essentially be the political equivalent of a nuclear bomb, and there would be marches everywhere, and I don't know if I would actually join a march, but I would certainly support those who do. I've marched before, that's nothing. I mean, if you spend time in D.C., you're at a march somewhere, some point during your tenure.
Yeah, no, marching is the new brunch.
Right. The fact of the matter, yes, marching is the new brunch. Well put. The fact of the matter is, what will stop this is more Democrats in Washington. I don't care what the idiot Bernie Bros think. I don't care what Susan Sarandon thinks. I don't care what anybody else thinks. What will stop Donald Trump is more Democrats in Washington. Period. Anything that helps that is fine. Anything that gets in the way of that is a waste of time. And I'm not saying marches are a waste of time. They can be helpful. I'm not saying anything else necessarily a waste of time. I need to know what the hell it is. But that's the context that everyone should be putting, in my opinion, that everyone should be putting their thoughts to. And Kevin, keep this and cut the rest of whatever the hell I said. The fact of the matter is...
Oh, I intended to.
Very good. The fact of the matter is... If you are truly worried about that, you have to ask yourself, whatever political action you're going to take or thinking about taking, will this help elect more Democrats in November? If you think yes, then go ahead and do it. If you think no, then put it aside and look for things that you think will help get Democrats elected in November.
And to piggyback on that, there are websites like Flippable. I am tired. Flippable and Swing Left and other websites and the Crooked Seven that the Crooked Media folks have out, specifically working on turning red districts blue. And you can throw money at these people. You can phone bank for these people from the comfort of your own couch. You don't even, like, if you've got an unlimited data plan, you can become a lean, mean phone banking machine from your own home. So there are a bazillion things that we can all do that aren't a major waste, or aren't a major use of our time, aren't a major strain on our resources. So all of that is out there. We can elect Democrats, and it's all about the get out the vote operation come November. Also reminding everyone to get registered right now, today, check it, see if you've done it, do it again. Double registering won't hurt you.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
So before the break, we were talking about people coming out to vote in 2018 and how important that is. So let's now turn to the midterms and talk a little bit about them. First of all, there was some good news that came out of the Supreme Court today.
Yay.
About gerrymandering. DJ, what happened there and why was it good?
Yeah, the United States Supreme Court told the Pennsylvania legislature, Republican legislature, which was told to redraw the congressional districts by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. They were told by the United States Supreme Court, yeah, you really do have to listen to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and you better redraw the damn lines. Now, the legislature probably figured that because the Supreme Court had told lots of other states that they didn't have to redraw their lines before the 2018 election, they thought, oh, they'll tell us, we can wait too. The problem was that the Supreme Court in those states were responding to federal district courts throwing out lines. In this case, it was the state Supreme Court that threw out the lines. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, hey, look, this is between you and the Pennsylvania Supremes. If they told you to do something, you better effing do it. Thank you very much.
Wow, congratulations, SCOTUS. I'm just curious, who voted against that? Do you know by any chance who tried to...
I don't. I would, however, say, given the current makeup of the court, that it was...
It's 5-2 Democrats. The Democrats rule that court 5-2?
No, I was wondering about the Supreme Court.
He's talking about the Fed Supremes.
Oh, actually, as far as the Supreme Court, it didn't even get to the Supreme Court. Justice Alito... was the only one who saw it, and then he turned it back. He didn't even.
Wow,
yeah, he declined to hear it.
Good for you, Samuel.
And they could have possibly brought it back if four justices had disagreed with Alito and wanted to take it up, but clearly they didn't. So
yeah.
at the most, three justices would have sided with the Pennsylvania legislature, and we're not even sure that they got that many.
Yeah.
Right. Hmm.
Right.
So
very
now
good.
I'm going to further hijack the conversation because this reminds me of something.
Further,
yeah. That's what I haven't already.
So you're going to do it because that's who you are.
Yeah, exactly. because this reminds me of a situation we actually had this here in Virginia, where it was a federal district court that invalidated a congressional district. It was the third congressional district here in southeastern Virginia. That was due to they were essentially packing African-American voters into one district. And the way the Voting Rights Act is now interpreted, that is no longer constitutional. So there was a similar situation in Pennsylvania, a Republican legislature and a Democratic governor. And they couldn't agree on the map. So the court said, okay, fine, we're going to draw it for you. And what the court did, and this is just so you Pennsylvania listeners get an idea what's going to happen to you, the district court appointed what they call a special master, and the special master's job was to essentially redraw that district to the court's liking. Well, he redrew that district and four districts around it. You kind of had to do that, and it ended up adding another Democrat to Virginia's representation. It completely changed the nature of Southeast Virginia. It was three Republicans and one Democrat. Now it's 2-2. They're going to have to redraw the entire state of Pennsylvania's lines. The Republicans do have an advantage in the Pennsylvania congressional delegation. They probably won't have an advantage in the Pennsylvania delegation after the lines are redrawn.
And the lines have to be redrawn by, like, Friday.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Am I correct? It's an incredibly short turnaround. I'm sure they can file for some sort of extension because Friday seems real close.
They can't, actually.
They can't?
They can't.
Oh
no, there's no. Yeah, they either give them a map by Friday, or they will start drawing their own map, which means they'll probably hire their own special master, and it'll still take about maybe a month or so, as that special master figures out how he or she wants to draw the lines. So you won't see a map by Friday because the governor is a Democrat, the legislature is a Republican, and they'll never agree to a map.
So, DJ, let me ask you, is this now setting a map or a path for other states to follow, that the best way to get the outcome that they want, which is to end gerrymandering, is to win in state court as opposed to federal court? And that way, maybe this is a precedent that the Supreme Court would support?
Well, it's quite possible, because this Supreme Court in particular, the conservatives that are on the Supreme Court, a number of them are largely more states' rights type folks. And if it is a state Supreme Court that says the way you've drawn the lines violates the state constitution, the federal courts are probably not going to interfere with that.
But let me just point out the irony is that in 2000, the Supreme Court stopped a Florida state Supreme Court from holding a recount. So it's exactly the opposite.
Well,
precedent.
It was a somewhat different court between then and now. There were 14th Amendment issues with the way that recount was being done county to county. There were different rules for different counties. That sort of flew in the face.
But they did overrule a state court about a state election.
They did overrule a state court about a state election, but it was due to factors that do not show up when it comes to redistricting.
Okay, and then the other thing that's interesting about the midterms, and we won't spend a whole lot of time on it, but people may not know this, there's been a shift now in the fundraising. For a while, the GOP was out-fundraising Democrats, and now, according to an article I just read today, the Democrats are outraising the GOP in House races. There's more than 40 House Republicans who were outraised by their Democratic opponent or opponents in the last quarter.
This is figures on the candidates, not the national parties?
Correct.
Okay. That's I like seeing that number because that's what was the strength of the Doug Jones race. The national party kept their hands out of it and allowed Doug Jones to run his own campaign and do it locally. They didn't come in and message stuff incredibly so that people were giving directly to the candidate. And I think that is how Perez actually wants to handle things as chairman, to make each of these races very individual and look at it at, from kitchen table standpoints. I think Danica Rome is actually a great example of a candidate who, despite everything else that was going on, ran on, we need to reduce gridlock in my district. We need to fix traffic. That was a major part of her platform. So I think that's going to be one of the hallmarks of the coming race, is that each candidate is really going to get to write their own script and solicit their own money, and the national party is going to somehow facilitate that from behind a curtain and not come in and make themselves look like this national overlord that manages every single Democrat. At least that's my hope.
Just getting back to Pennsylvania, in 2016, Republicans got 54% of the vote for House of Representatives, and they took more than two-thirds of the seats for Congress. They took 13 out of 18 seats with 54% of the vote. A new map would, in theory, give Switch at least two, maybe even three, or possibly even four, seats from the Republicans to the Democrats.
Right. Well, that's the problem with gerrymandering. It's that you can win more seats with a minority or with a small majority because of the way these districts are drawn. Right. Now, the other big news this week, there's so much happening. It's
we have to bounce
around, because this is one of the biggest news weeks I can remember since the election.
And this is the stuff podcasters live for. We dream of weeks like
folks,
this.
Folks, this would be a long podcast even if I went mute for the whole thing, which of course you know I can't do.
Then we talk about DJ exploding in his kitchen.
So, you know, we have another deadline coming for a potential government shutdown 3 days from now, February 8th. This is because the last government shutdown led to a CR extension of about 2.5 weeks. That is coming to an end, and it hinges now on a couple of different issues. The DACA deal is still one of them. Trump now also wants his wall. And there's one other issue that may be on the table, which again goes back to what we were talking about in the first half of the show. The Democrats may try to insist on a rider that says essentially that before the president or the Justice Department could fire Robert Mueller, or if they did try to fire Robert Mueller, it would have to be approved by a panel of independent experts. They couldn't just do it unilaterally. So with that in mind, we've got 3 days left. We're not even close to being close to being close to a deal on any of this stuff. Do you think there's going to be another shutdown, or do you think, like I do, that the Democrats are going to just fold their hand?
Well, the Democrats, many Democrats have already said they're not going to go for another shutdown. I mean, they just don't have the stomach for it.
Well, that's great negotiating, isn't it?
Right. I mean, it's a lot of them have said, look, they didn't come off looking well in their home state. And they're like, look, we're not doing it this time. We're going to try to do it. But their rationale is we don't need to go for a shutdown because McConnell has said in good faith that we're going to bring up this DACA deal in the next 3 days and we're going to have something. So we feel pretty good, but we're not going to go for the shutdown.
But so, it's not going to happen before the 8th. No. So what do they do then?
What they do,
because he's not bringing it up.
What they do is
the
they fall
days.
Right into the trap that was set for them. Folks, Mitch McConnell wants a shutdown. Do you know why he wants a shutdown? He wants a shutdown,
because
presidents win shutdowns. Even Donald freaking Trump won the shutdown. Okay? Presidents just win the damn things. And the
Okay, you said that the last
I did.
Time, but I'm
And
gonna,
then
I'm
President Trump won the
this,
shutdown.
DJ. People say that we have no debate on this show. Even though we all dislike little Donald Trump, we seem to disagree a lot.
Well, no, Trump won the media wars of the shutdown, arguably. But he didn't win the policy wars. He got zero of his priorities out of the agreement that came up 3 weeks ago. The only people who got what they wanted out of that were the Democrats, who got Chip.
The Democrats got Chip. But also, let's not forget that the extension was only for about 14 or 18 days. And it's very possible that unless they come up with a DACA deal and unless they give the Democrats something else, they're going to have to go for another short-term extension. We're now in a situation where we're funding the government for 18 days at a time.
Yeah, and this is how it was in 2013 before the last shutdown, too. This is not new. We've been funding the government in two-week increments.
Not 18 days at a time.
Yo, we were. We were down to 14 days, 10 days. It was a mess.
Yeah, this.
Well, this is, I mean, how long can this go on?
Because for most
no one's
going to
sign a long-term funding bill until they get something.
No, they could keep this going for as long as they want. I have no faith in their ability to actually fund the government for any longer than a month at a time. They don't want to. There's no incentive for the Republicans to do it.
It's not a month at a time. It's 2.5 weeks.
I know. They don't care.
I mean, you wouldn't run a homeowners association this way.
The last time we were in a pattern like this, they were actually scraping away at funding. Each CR took something away. Right now, the CRs are adding things in. We got CHIP in the last one. Oh, God, what did I just read that they were talking about putting in? Funding for community health centers. That, you know, they're starting to, like, throw nickels and dimes at Democratic pet programs in these CRs to get
the
votes.
Let's get back to the real game, not the sideshow. Is he going to get funding for his wall or not?
I don't care.
You don't care?
Build the fucking wall. I don't care.
Oh,
I've been saying since the day.
Oh, my God.
Yes. No. I have been saying since the day after the inauguration, we should build the goddamn wall, or at least a couple miles worth of it. Put a big mission accomplished.
The political mistake of our generation.
Put a mission accomplished banner on it. Put him in a flight suit like George Bush.
No.
Let him hold a press conference.
George Bush
and then
won
send
the election
to,
because of the flight suit.
And send him to Mar-a-Lago and let him stroke out on overcooked steak.
You are so... Oh, my gosh. I love you, Rebecca. You are so wrong on this.
I don't care
if
about
Donald
the wall.
Trump
I only care about
gets
the Dreamers.
To build...
And I don't want to withhold a win from Trump. I want to get a win for the Dreamers.
No, you're Do you want 8 years of Donald Trump? Do you want him reelected? Because I'm telling you,
if he
gets $5 billion to start building that effing wall, he will turn around and say, we won. I promised it to you. We're building it. No one will care that they're only going to get a half a mile before 2020. He will work that. He will win reelection based on that one thing.
But you know what? If he doesn't get funding for the wall, he's going to go to his base and scream, they wouldn't give me the wall. You got to give me 4 more years so that I can build the wall. Look, MS-13 killed a chipmunk.
Nope, you're wrong. If he gets that wall started, it is game, set, match.
I don't think it's game, set, match.
He's going to win re-election.
I think he might not even run for re-election if he thought the wall was finished. He's bored with
it's
this
It's not going
to
be finished.
Why he's not doing anything until 11 a.m.
He'll run for re-election. He will run for re-election because the party wants him to run for re-election because
they're winning. A new guy.
The Republican Party is now a subsidiary of the Trump Organization. That's just the reality.
Yes.
No, the Republican Party is the Trump Organization.
Yes. They're winning. They're getting everything they want. They got Paul Ryan got the wet dream tax plan that he dreamed of since he was 11 years old. Okay? They reversed Obamacare. They did away with the individual mandate.
That's not a reversal. That's a
They wanted to kill the individual mandate.
They did it
after 7 years.
Yes, they did.
I'm sorry, I'm angry now. Because you guys are arguing with me. And
yes,
frankly,
we're arguing with you because
picture.
You're wrong.
You're missing the big picture. They're getting everything they ever could have dreamed of, whether it was Mitt Romney, whether it was John Kasich, whether it was Ted Cruz, whether it was John McCain. They're getting everything they ever wanted. And that's why they're fighting so hard to keep this president. He is their wet dream.
Okay,
and if he gets that wall built, if he gets funding for that wall and can show the American public a big piece of it that will show up on television, even though it's, like I said, a half a mile or a mile of it, if they get that thing going, it is game, set, match. You might as well strap yourself in for another 7 years.
Okay, hang on. Let's a couple questions. Which Hillary Clinton voter will switch to Donald Trump because a wall was built?
A lot of them.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
The wall's a bad idea. Okay. Hillary Clinton voters knew that already.
I do not see a single Hillary Clinton voter who would go over to Donald Trump because of the wall. There's none. I cannot think of any who would do that. Number one, I'm not necessarily saying build the wall. I haven't figured out the, you know, a successfully constructed wall would energize the Trump base, and I think that is a concern. I'm not going to rule it out. But as for these people getting everything that they wanted, Paul Ryan wants entitlement reform. He's never going to get it. Okay.
We'll see.
Mitch McConnell wants more Republicans in the United States Senate. He probably won't get that. Mitch McConnell doesn't give a damn about anything on policy. Not at all. Right? He's a political animal. It's all about the number of senators that he gets gets reelected. He doesn't care about policy. Mitch McConnell doesn't care about policy.
Mitch totally McConnell has disagree. No soul.
Mitch McConnell
is
not care about
totally
policy.
Disagree. Paul, and the only beans he can counter senators.
He wants more Republican senators. Paul, but to say that he doesn't care about policy,
Mitch McConnell,
I can't imagine where you get that.
Watching him for the over 30 years that he's been a United States senator,
yeah.
The one thing that he cares about, the one policy that he cares about the most, is anything that limits campaign fundraising and campaign spending. Now, in my opinion, he actually has a good constitutional argument,
like,
but he doesn't care about
mofo.
The constitutional argument. He cares about being able to raise and spend money to get more Republicans elected. That's all he cares about. As I said, Pat...
No, this is a guy who will run negative ads against people who might declare in his own state.
Yeah.
He owns the party in Kentucky because he managed to win a majority there and get a majority congressional delegation. He is entirely about the electoral machine.
Right.
That is his heart and his soul, if he has such things.
Dan, as I said, Paul Ryan wants entitlement reform. He's never going to get it. John McCain is actually still, when he's not in the hospital, criticizing Donald Trump and beating the hell out of him. John McCain
has an immigration compromise plan with Chris Coons.
Right.
They just dropped it today.
Right, which...
That's the only headline about immigration today.
Right.
And everybody else is silent except for John McCain and Chris Coons, which says to me both parties are interested in what they have to offer just so this whole damn thing can go away.
The issue here is, however, it's not that the Republican politicians like Donald Trump, although a lot more of them do now than they did 2 months ago. It's that the Republican voters like Donald Trump, and the Republican politicians are afraid of their voters. And that's just part of the whole underlying roiling problem with the Republican Party. As for what Democrats can do regarding this, I would just say do everything you possibly can to avoid a shutdown, because opposition parties, they just don't win shutdowns. They just don't. It's unfortunate, even when the opposition party may be right, but they just don't win shutdowns. The only time that the Democrats might actually succeed in winning a shutdown is if Trump actually gets Mueller fired and the Democrats say, you know what, we are shutting everything down, nothing gets funded at all because he fired Mueller. That might be the one issue where the American people go, yeah, that's worth shutting down the government.
It'll be too late, because by that point they'll have probably passed a long budget. But I'll tell you what, I think they should do that now. I think that they should take that stand now. If the writer isn't in the deal, I think they should shut the sucker down. They should turn around and pin this. You know, it's always, oh, the Democrats are defunding the military. The Democrats are putting our people in harm's way. Turn it around and say, Trump won't sign this deal. He's the one who's putting them in harm's way. And let me say one other thing, because I came into this podcast on fire. I told you guys before we started it, I had a lot to say, and I'm going to get it off my chest today, and then I'll probably edit it out tonight. Which I wish I could do in real life. I would be much richer if I could do that in real life.
You're the admin of a Facebook group, Kevin. You can edit whatever you want out of your...
Well,
you just
that's not real
stuff.
Enough for me. where is Elizabeth Warren in this damn fight? Where is Bernie Sanders? You know, Bernie Sanders was supposed to have been starting a revolution that was going to continue beyond his failed campaign. Where is he now? I know he's going around the country and giving speeches to colleges, but he's providing no leadership in this. Elizabeth Warren is providing no leadership. Cory Booker, a little bit better. Kamala Harris, a little bit better. But I, as a Democrat, and you guys know I'm a pretty loyal Democrat, I'm starting to get very disenchanted with my party. because...
But Kevin, here's the thing. When all of the Democrats are absolutely silent on an issue, when there isn't anyone out there issuing press releases or, you know, standing on the rotunda of the of one of the congressional office buildings and doing interviews, it's for a reason. If they're all not talking, it's because there's something specific they've been told not to say. They have sat at their weekly senatorial caucus lunch and agreed, okay, we're not talking until X moment happens, and we don't know what X moment is yet. So when there is unified silence, it's usually for a reason.
Yeah, but I'm actually going to side with I'm not going to give the Democrats in Congress that much credit. I don't think they're that coordinated. I don't really think they're that smart. But I do remember as a Republican wanting Newt Gingrich to do the same thing with Bill Clinton in 1995 and 96, and he did. It didn't work. I wanted Ted Cruz and John Boehner to do the same thing in 2013. Context. It didn't work.
I acknowledge the historical context. I'm just saying, you know, history does not necessarily prove the future. We found that out in 2016 to our, you know, eternal pain. I'm telling you that the Democratic Party has to grow a set, and they got to do it fast. I like Chuck Schumer as a senator. I like Nancy Pelosi as a Congress lady, but they are not the strong leaders that we need to stand up to Donald Trump, who is playing them like a fiddle. And if we allow this to continue, and if he wins this shutdown thing, and if the economy doesn't tank, and I'm not rooting for it to tank, I've got a lot of money in the stock market. Believe me, it does me
no
good.
Not as much as you had this morning.
That's right.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh at your pain, Kevin. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not in pain. But I'm just saying, if the Democrats don't figure out what to stand for other than Donald Trump won't release our memo, then we are going to be in trouble in 2018. And going back to something that DJ said, and he's very right, if we don't turn out to vote in 2018, if we don't win those elections in 2018, we may be looking at a long, dry desert that is going to be so painful. Because at the end of it, we'll come out with a Supreme Court that is 7-2 conservative, and we will get changes to Medicare, changes to Social Security. We will get all the things that Democrats have been holding back for as long as we could. And if we let Donald Trump somehow sneak by all of this, we are looking at an abyss. And on that happy note,
I was gonna say,
wow,
let's talk about something cheerful.
Let's talk about something cheerful.
This has been a dark podcast. We have been dark tonight.
Well, like I said, I came into it angry, and I'm going out angry. The other happy thing that happened this week is the little Donald Trump administration overturned an Obama-era payday lender regulation that was going to put more regulations on payday lenders so that they can't screw their customers. There was one pending case, and I believe it was Kansas or Kentucky, and I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly, where a payday lender was they were charging 1,000% interest.
Jesus.
To their customers. And the Consumer Financial Protection Board was taking them on in court, and because of this change in regulations that Trump's installed new head of the CFPB put in place, that suit has been dropped. Okay? What kind of people support payday lenders? Imagine.
Bad ones. Bad
imagine
people.
How bad these people are.
That's.
And
we
and
knew. The thing that, is, as Democrats, the four of us, we yeah, all that, knew that Trump was a bad person and that everyone he surrounded himself were bad people. It was, you know, this is not our fault. We didn't do this.
Well, the Democrats did because we were not united in 2016. So there.
Huh? And Kevin bringing the uplifting content.
Wow.
So, what were your favorite Super Bowl commercials?
I'll tell you what. Since we're going dark, did anyone see the I think it was Dodge Ram?
Oh my God.
And it's the one that I'm still shocked about. It was the
I missed it, but that certainly is the front runner for worst Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh,
commercial.
It was Martin Luther King's.
Yeah, DJ was texting me during the game. He's like, "What just happened with the Dodge commercial?" Like, I can't even tell you.
I missed that. I was on the road.
I actually
It was better that way.
What was it? I don't remember it.
So it's a,
it was a Trump commercial with an MLK speech as the voiceover.
Yeah, it's this like very stirring, like, you know, call to service, call like how important you are, blah blah. It's this very moving speech by Martin Luther King Jr. And then it's like Dodge Ram, built to serve, and I'm like,
it's astonishing. It was right up there with Pepsi's Black Lives Matter commercial with Kendall Jenner.
Right, it was like
it was that level of bad commercial.
Right, like Pepsi said, "Hey, we just totally shit all over an entire group of people and how they feel about social injustice." And Dodge said, "Hold on, hold my beer."
I actually wrote that.
Okay, so that was the worst ad. But in terms of the best ad, I'm going to have to go with Toyota, with the rabbi,
yes,
and the priest and the imam,
well. They did very
and the monk. That was a really good one.
Yes, if you are going to use messages of social unity to sell trucks, that's the way to do it. With them meeting the nuns at the game, and the nuns are like, "This is what happens when you're late." It was great.
Yes,
that was fantastic. But really, the best ad was the one with Odell Beckham Jr. and Eli Manning doing the finale from Dirty Dancing.
Oh, I missed that.
That was pretty
Chuck
good.
I have.
That was
you can
good.
Find it. I've watched it no fewer than three times today. My son thought I was losing my mind last night when I was screaming at the TV, "Do the lift! Do the lift!" It was the best. Just the best. And I want to adopt Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. because anybody who can be a part of the joke like that, that's my people.
Okay. Yeah. Well, with that. With that, I think we have a podcast and a half, or we have one third of one. I'm not sure which.
Funny.
Please follow us on Twitter at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And if you could, please share our link on your Facebook timeline and tell your friends about us, because we'd like more listeners. We want to thank Alan Keeney for our new theme song and Ian Patrick Shannon for our kick-ass new website. MorePerfectUnionPodcast.com. Have you moused over the Lincoln thing yet? It moves when you mouse over it. It's really cool.
I did not know that.
Really?
Does it do Dirty Dancing? and yes, actually, Lincoln does the lift of Dirty Dancing. He runs at George Washington.
The lift is everything.
Now I have the time of my life.
So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
I'm going to go teach my dog that dance from Dirty Dancing. We're going to do it together. Be a YouTube sensation. Me and my dog.
I've been waiting for so long.